Okay.
So this is our third interview, I mean, isn't it?
Yeah, our first in the nature, but third in total, yeah.
Well, this is Amin, and I came to Ibiza to interview you.
Thank you.
So, Amin, you teach non-duality in Ibiza and in Israel. That's where you basically live, right?
Yeah, at the moment it's Ibiza and Israel, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I want to ask you some questions about the Enlightening Congress you just went to. It was the second Enlightening Congress in Berlin.
Yeah, it was second Enlightenment Congress in Berlin that was basically the first time in Europe, I think in the world as well, that only non-duality teachers get together and share
Satsang together.
And do satsang together and give feedback to each other. And there was no real structure or purpose, a goal. It was just coming together and seeing what comes up. And it was really beautiful for me as a teacher to meet other teachers and to get nourished by other teachers and to nourish other teachers. And because usually until now, being a non-duality teacher, you know, you don't really have colleagues. You teach on your own, you have your students, and sometimes you go to a festival where there are other teachers, but for some reason the festivals, teachers don't mix, you know. They come, they do their thing, and they go to their apartment or whatever.
Yeah.
So, it's a lonely profession.
You know? Well, not
even though you're all the one with everything,
So my question is, because this time, is it like this? Lots of people ask questions, and everybody, all the teachers, are allowed to answer. And is that right? Like that? They're like answering whenever they want to.
Well, there's actually no structure at all. Sometimes it's one teacher starts to talk about something, raise an issue, and then people from the crowd respond, or other teachers respond. The first festival was the first congress. I mean, there were three teachers going on stage, giving a satsang and, you know, giving some talking about certain issue, and then the audience would respond, or the other teachers would. It varies. It's just basically anyone can say whatever he wants whenever he wants.
So my question is, if there are so many teachers together, is it like this that you kind of always have the same thing to say, or you're contradicting each other?
There's a base where it's all the same because everyone experiences the same state of non-duality, which is oneness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the interpretation of the state and how to live it in the world varies, and that's according to the person's background, intelligence, sensitivity. There are different, you know, in the Congress, the second Congress, for some reason, people started kind of discussing their own different so-called opinion, and it kind of started to go to a space where, hey, I think I'm right, and maybe, you know, my way is the right way, but,
and what happened?
The bottom line, somehow they come to some kind of agreement, or they let go. The bottom line is that they have to understand that the interpretation of the non-dual state is different in every teacher and according to his experience
and his personality.
His personality.
Yeah.
So there is, like I said, all teachers can say, "I am consciousness, all is one." But but there's a lot more to it, you know. There's interpreting it. What does it mean to live from a space of non-duality, realizing that you are consciousness? Is it still evolving, or once you realize your true self, meaning you are consciousness, does evolution stop? So there's a lot more to it, but it has to do with your background and your intelligence and your willingness to go beyond spiritual concepts and to really analyze and investigate what is true.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a teacher, you can easily fall into identification with religious or spiritual concepts that are not necessarily accurate, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to pick up on something you said about the... how did you put it? About the difficulties that... with non-duality, you could get into the how did you put it? Into the trap, into the trap of religious concepts. Like, could you give an example of that? What trap is there?
Well, I think we talked about one time in the second interview that there's a lot of superstitious beliefs in religions, and for instance, in Buddhism, that enlightenment human being is like a golden statue,
mm-hmm.
and not human, doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Never has any so-called human faults and so forth. Doesn't have any desires. So after liberation, a person can kind of self-deny his human side and say, "Hey, I've reached. I'm completely free. I don't need to evolve anymore. I don't need to reflect."
Mm-hmm.
It's especially if you want a current example. It's very common with Advaita teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't know much about if it's a true interpretation of Advaita, but. The way Advaita is interpreted today is that there's nobody there, everything is an illusion, and there's no evolution after enlightenment, and that's about it.
And that leaves me in a state of, so what am I going to do with my life if this is all true? If there's nothing there, it's all an illusion. And
what I'm saying is true and it isn't true. It is, of course, it is all an illusion in relationship to absolute consciousness, but still, it is there. On its own, it's life, you know, has its things you have to deal with.
Yeah, life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have this question in my mind myself for quite some time, like what, and I'm gonna ask you now. What do you think life is about? Like, do you have like a goal that you're maybe not even conscious focusing on, or is there any? What is the focus? What is your focus, and what would you suggest to people?
Life is about living to the fullest, without the limitations of the mind, without concepts, without right and wrong, without being a pure expression of life. On the other hand, I can see that within me there is a strong force, yeah, that pushes towards evolving. You know, even now after liberation, there's still a very, very, very strong force within me that pushes me to evolve. When I say the me, to evolve, meaning pushes the me, my intelligence to become sharper and to create a synthesis between the spirit and matter. It pushes my soul to express herself authentically. So there's a strong strong force for expression of that which I've realized, and it's the way I see it is and to understand it too. So and I think it's endless, you know. I don't think there's an end to it. When I look at, for me, at the last 10 years, 14 years of being liberated, it just grows and grows and grows. Meaning the ability, the meeting between who I realize to myself to be and life just becomes more and more intimate and creative and fruitful, you know. It's as if constantly you're bringing absolute consciousness comes to life, manifests itself, and it happens through you, and you're the vessel, and with your intelligence and your willingness to surrender to it, it just grows, becomes fuller.
Do you think everybody has that inner force inside of them?
Of course, I think everybody. You mean people who are not liberated? I think every human being has this force, but we misunderstand this force.
In what way do we misunderstand?
We think that this force of, it's a life force, the way I see it. It's manifestation. We think that it's has to do with us. With making sure that who we think we are, the way we know ourselves, a certain personality, we think that this force is there to strengthen it. The mind uses this force to fight the reality, to fight the acknowledgement that of mortality. Mortality, the psychological mortality and the mortality of the body and physical mortality. Human beings use life force to seek security, to strengthen the relative I. That's how I see it. So we use the force, the life force, into accumulating things or knowledge or stuff. Or just arguing, making sure that our theory about life is the right theory. Mm-hmm. And of course the root, the force, the way I see that life force is manifestation wanting to express itself freely, yeah? just wants to express itself through us, but our mind completely distorts it.
Do you mean that our mind wants concepts, brings concepts into this force, but this force just wants to freely express itself without any concept?
Yeah. Let's call it a force, let's call it life. Life. Love.
I like force. Because there is an inner, I acknowledge that there is an inner something in me, an energy maybe, that just leads me everywhere, kind of. Maybe I call it sometimes intuition. Would you call it that?
There you have to be careful because you say it leads me. Maybe you might even say it leads me the right way, but this life force has no interest in you. It expresses itself. It doesn't. It doesn't know where it goes.
And it has no interest in the right way.
No.
It can be a bad way too.
Yeah, it's a life force. Bad, there's no bad. There's no bad or good. Bad happens when the life force is blocked and distorted. Then you have, you have violence, you have wars.
Really?
Yeah.
Couldn't that be the force wanting to express itself in violence? That's how I understood your answer.
I think violence is a distortion of life energy.
What is distortion? Help me. Can you describe
when life
that?
Life energy is
blocked, pushed down,
yeah.
Suppressed.
You don't realize how much a human being limits their liveliness, their vitality.
And how do they do this?
Their whole existence is a limitation. Identifying with the mind and the body is a limitation. It's shutting it off. Imagine yourself living life without any attachment, without hope, without memory, just letting life.
Here in the moment.
Yeah.
No past, no future thinking.
Yeah.
But if I bring in, because I do have a mind, I have a brain, I cannot ignore it totally. If I do bring in the past and the future and all the problems, is it maybe good to be just aware of it so it does not rain me all the time?
When I say past and future, I call it psychological identification. You can mm-hmm. think about past and future, but your expression of in the moment has no agenda in it. It doesn't carry past memory, psychological memory, and it doesn't project it to the future. So you're doing, you understand? So whatever you're doing, it's not left with you. It just goes. It's like smoke, you know. It's just not gone.
Yeah, it's not. What lots of the people think it's not you. It's not let's say.
You don't carry it.
It's clothes on you that you keep forever.
No, you wear it for a moment and then you throw it.
Oh.
Something fell from the tree.
That was the moment.
Exactly. This is the moment.
Yeah.
Just a puff.
Yeah.
So,
That's
freedom without any agenda.
That's why I asked that question, because I kind of have a feeling you do need a goal in life.
Who's the you that needs the goal?
Well, sitting here.
If you look at the you that needs the goal, that you is a certain memory, yeah? That through experiences that you call yourself Sabina. And that memory, because of certain feeling of lack, of disconnection from the source, always has a certain goal that he imagines himself to become. And that goal has to do maybe with certain memory in the past, a memory of lack that wasn't really true through a certain experience. I don't have any goals. I don't see, what do you need a goal? Look, we're sitting here, so beautiful here in Ibiza under the tree.
Yeah, but I don't believe you that you don't have a goal, because I know you're traveling to Canada soon, so that is a goal.
It is not a goal.
So if
it's not, when you say to me a goal, when I think about a goal is thinking about a certain point in the future that we're mm-hmm. hoping that something will be manifested there
mm-hmm.
that will give us a certain sense of well-being or mm-hmm. feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't see.
Okay.
It's okay to have plans for the future, yeah?
Yeah.
You have to go this and do this and that. But the plans have no psychological hope in them. They don't come from a. Our ego is not in the foreground. We don't hope that these goals will make us full, be in an any better position than we are now.
So can I understand your answer a little like that? It's fine to have goals, but non-duality, or being in non-duality, means don't depend on the outcome of the goal?
Of course. I think the highest, they say, you know, in Hinduism, they say that the highest understanding is do your actions. I think it goes like this. Do your actions without expecting fruits for your actions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So if I do expect fruits, then the suffering starts. So either the ego likes
it.
Yeah. And you think it's a better life than before if you over succeeded, and if you don't succeed, you're suffering, right? If you're dependent on the outcome.
Anything that takes away from the moment, meaning from realizing who you are, from being who you are, is suffering.
Just in this minute, in this second.
Yeah.
Who are we? Are you an energy, or what are you? What are we? What?
Life. Life. Expression of life.
Expression of life. Okay.
Yeah. When you make love to your boyfriend, do you think, who am I? Or do you think about goals?
I think of liking it.
Okay, then... Yeah,
it's just
you like it. This is life.
It's an expression of life.
We are expression of life.
Yeah.
And
but
yeah.
I just want to get the understanding for the average of people, because we always tend to be not in the moment. So is it actually that I just all the time recall myself to be in the moment? Is that giving me more peace?
To recall yourself.
I don't know if that's the right word.
You're asking what is the way to be in the moment?
That is another question. No, but because my mind always drags me away of the moment. So are you doing that consciously, or are you always in the moment by your nature? Because I'm not. I think of the past and the future.
I also think of the past. marvelous
future. Do you remind yourself all the time to
no.
go back into?
I don't need. I am the moment,
mm-hmm.
using my intelligence to sometimes think of past or future.
Mm-hmm. And then you go back to the moment.
I'm always the moment.
You're always in the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
Because.
Am I not?
You are, but you don't realize it.
Okay, so is that the waking up?
There's only the moment. There's only the moment. There's nothing else but now. But
mm-hmm. is that what people call waking up?
Waking up. Well, there's waking up and enlightenment. But what I call enlightenment, the final shift, is the realization that all there is life. That there's no an individual you who's separated from life. I like to use the metaphor of the ocean. The ocean has many waves, yeah? And before enlightenment, you think that you're a wave separated to the ocean. And in the moment of enlightenment, you realize, yeah, actually, I'm in an ocean. I'm part of the ocean that expresses itself into a wave. You see the difference?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah? I'm not a wave with other waves around me. I'm an ocean that mm-hmm. expresses itself equally and in the same flavor through me, through another wave, through another
mm-hmm.
wave.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use a metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good metaphor.
Yeah. So there is some kind of an individuality there, you know, and the wave is a bit different
yeah.
than other waves.
Yeah.
But that individuality is part of the big the total, yeah? the big ocean.
So what can I do to go if I haven't experienced that yet? What can I do as the average of everybody to
For me,
feel the moment. Just shut up or?
No. Because when you say shut up, it's basically again you're using your mind to quiet it. You're again in your mind. You're using the mind to quiet the mind. It cannot be. Enlightenment is realizing yourself beyond the mind, beyond the relative mind, yeah? Beyond the identification of the mind. And it can only happens through silence. Through deepening silence. Just for so-called what we call the average person. I don't like to use the average, but for a person who is identified with the mind,
yeah.
It is to. I say it very simply because it is like this, and this was my way as well. I say it's so simple now, to learn to be your best friend in silence and aloneness. And maybe at the beginning it's a bit difficult, scary, but slowly, slowly you learn that silence, it feels good and it's intimate and you don't feel alone anymore. This is the key. That's it. Nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
After that comes your intelligence slowly starts to understand and what is you can understand the energetical phenomena that start to happen to you, but the primary the transformation is energetical. When I say energetical, it's a silence. Even energetical sounds sophisticated. It's just silence. Just being in silence. Human beings are afraid of silence. They think. They have a misunderstanding regarding silence. They think that in silence means being alone, lonely. And silence means
boredom.
Not boredom and not being there. And but these are all these interpretations come from the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if you stay there a little bit longer, you'll see that hey, there's a whole new reality there.
Mm-hmm.
But the mind interprets it like that.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And boredom and loneliness and all these qualities that human beings are so afraid of,
mm-hmm.
I always say that it's the mind fighting for air, you know? Don't be afraid of it. Just stay there and observe it, yeah? and try to find a deeper, intimate space within yourself, a silent space. And it is there. It's not complicated at all. It's just to know which way to go, but it's not. And you don't need to read books for it, and you don't need to practice too much for it, because it is already there. Who you are is already here, mm-hmm. not there, here.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the simplicity of silence. But the mind can say, yeah, but, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
it seems so boring and so colorless and so unexciting. Yeah? That's what the mind sometimes says. So we want shamanic rituals, and we want the complicated meditation techniques and books and that whole festivals of colors and meanings and concepts, which again, it's a distraction to realize truth. It feeds the spiritual ego, you know. The ego again feels full and with meaning, but no.
Does the ego always need explanations for everything?
Of course it does. Yeah. The ego needs a direction.
Uh-huh.
Needs a purpose.
A goal.
Yeah. Because it's never enough. Somewhere, uh-huh. human being knows that
uh-huh.
it's not enough. It's only words. We're just talking about words.
Uh-huh.
So we look for more words, more words,
uh-huh.
uh-huh. more ideas, more concepts.
Uh-huh.
We have to say, hello, there's a body here.
uh-huh.
No.
So life is basically about just enjoying it?
Not even, you cannot say that. It's not about enjoying it. Life is about being a human experience. And we are, when you accept it fully, the human experience, you don't try to be something else, or you know, a superhuman, or a human who lives forever. When you accept the human experience with everything, you know, with all the limitations of it, the weaknesses of it, because being a human experience is not so easy sometimes. Yeah.
No, not at all.
When you accept the human experience as it is, Then it's just beautiful. Just, I cannot say in words. Just being human being.
Then it is
beautiful.
just the way it is.
Yeah, but there's beauty to it. There's a,
mm-hmm.
there's the beauty of of the heart.
I want to talk about the ego,
mm-hmm.
or what we call the ego.
Yeah.
Would you call the ego your friend?
My friend.
Or is it an enemy?
It's not a friend, it's not an enemy, it just is. It's the ego, the way I see it, is a certain identification with identification with a certain personality that enables me to function in the world. Yeah, that gives me a certain that gives me a certain point of reference that from there I can create. Yeah. So.
But it seems like it's only harming us.
It's not harming. This is a person who's only
distracting us.
Huh?
Or distracting us. From
if,
what you
if
would
that do. If that ego, what you, is constantly busy of being in the foreground, being the boss, yeah, of being fighting to survive, yeah.
So what are you doing with your ego? Is he there and not
an ego?
There?
An ego is the way I experience it is a fine layer of a sense of I in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That most times doesn't interfere with the expression of who I truly am, with the expression of the soul. Sometimes I fall into reactions, or things come up when it does interfere. Yeah, but most of the time it does. Sometimes some things come up, but. Then they quickly go beyond them. Yeah.
So, do you think it's important to be aware of the ego? You know. I'm talking about manhood. You know, of people.
It's always good to be aware of the ego because there's always. Even after enlightenment, you depends what level you are, especially right after enlightenment, the ego sometimes tries to take its space, you know. And then...
Then it's an enlightened ego? I don't know how to picture it's, that.
It's an ego that takes true wisdom for its own power. The ego is hijacking a true experience.
Mm-hmm.
It could be very dangerous, very abusive.
Mm-hmm.
But from my understanding, it's the first stages after
mm-hmm.
enlightenment.
Because mm-hmm.
enlightenment has many, many stages.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just enlightenment, that's it.
But my question was, could the ego also be a friend? Meaning, if I'm aware that the ego exists and I cannot, you know, I have no ability to get rid of my ego, so I just make him or her as my friend. Being aware of it, knowing, okay, you're here, but I don't always have to listen to you, friend.
Yeah, just to be aware there's an entity within you, there's a pull within you, with every human being, to feel special and to always be right and
mm-hmm.
and to find meaning, yeah?
Mm-hmm. To find meaning.
Yeah, yeah. And that one that is there to find meaning is the one that is taking you away from beauty. Finding meaning.
Because it kills the silence?
Because it takes you away, projects you to the future, meaning of future. It takes you away from life. Find meaning. Life is not enough. There has to be something more.
But if you can talk of a meaning that is just of something that just happened. Does it take you away from the moment? Wanting. To always understand the meaning of things? Because it's actually keeping your mind busy. I'm trying to understand why that is. Difficult.
There's no meaning. There's just life.
There is no meaning.
No. Life is the meaning. There's no meaning that it is separate from life. Life is the meaning. Looking at a flower is the meaning. Looking at your child sleeping in the night is the meaning. It's love is the meaning. It's love. Yeah. There's nothing else. The way I understand, I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing else is needed besides love. Who wrote that? John Lennon. All you need is love.
It's so easy.
It is, but that easiness and simplicity scares human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sometimes they're willing, they're allowing it to be for a few minutes or a day or two. Being a nobody, meaning means that you want to be a somebody. Only the beauty of the moment.
Yeah, but isn't it okay to want to be somebody and then I just play that game?
What do you mean, playing a game?
Well, I see it almost as a game. You know, either I play the game of non-duality or the game of being somebody, the ego, and enjoy it, giving everything a meaning. It's fine. Isn't it fine, too, just to do that?
Depends if it's an authentic expression, you know? If it's an authentic, okay, I'll give you an example. I try to explain it. My authentic expression is non-duality, yeah? And it expresses itself through an ego that it presents itself as a so-called teacher, or, you know, I do certain things to express it, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. I can completely be in the role and teach and meet students, and because you need certain vessels, you need a certain order in this reality in order to create. But I don't. I'm not attached to this role. I'm not. It's just a tool of expression. It doesn't give me any meaning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The role.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't give me any extra fullness that I didn't have before.
Okay, so I try to put it in my words. I want to know if I understood. So you do actually, you know, call yourself a teacher. That is actually an ego way of saying it,
yeah.
But you don't identify with that role.
Exactly.
Meaning, yeah, you don't raise or lower yourself because of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's. I remember the first, the second, the third time I gave satsang. I don't know, suddenly, the satsang finished and I was kind of standing outside of there, 20 people walking out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I said to myself, you know, it's at the beginning after the first few years of enlightenment, you kind of, everything is new to you, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And you're surprised by some things that happen because you remember how it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised that it didn't touch me. I didn't feel anything special, or that people came to listen to me. You know?
Yeah, that you were the center of attention.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and being that way, I picture if a lot of people are that way, I pictured a very peaceful world.
I tell you, when I was in the Congress, I met a group of authentic teachers.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful. It was. I was thinking. I was just thinking. Imagine the whole world would be like this.
Yeah.
Woof.
Peaceful.
Yeah.
Having fun. But
I could say that the most predominant quality that I felt is just people were like, everybody allowed the other one to be.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
You cannot imagine. We used to also for me it was new. I'm always with in public with human beings who identify with their ego, and it was so new to me to be with all these people, and even though they were discussing things and but just to meet them later on the break, sit with a few together, and it was no competition, no. Just love, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like what you said. You said just everybody just accepted the way the other one was, or let them just be the way the other one is.
I'm not saying that maybe if we meet a few more times, things can start happening, you know? It's nothing new that teachers, even though they're so-called enlightened, they don't compete with each other or say nasty stuff about each other. Sometimes it happens, but the dominant quality of the meeting is of love. Of love without really caring. Without really caring what the other one does or who he is on the relative level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about the other teachers, but and I didn't talk to them much, but I was with them, and the recognition of their where they are, it was enough. Mm-hmm. You know, there was an understanding that was mm-hmm. beyond everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was just beautiful.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh yeah, I have one more question. You were talking about the teachings. Some people call it satsang. Isn't that a little like therapy? Could that be also
therapy?
Be some kind of therapy,
you know? What do you mean?
For people. You know, some people have a therapist, go to therapy, and the therapist helps them to solve or to, you know, realize what they're doing, and maybe then they have a easier, less suffering time in their life.
Yeah.
Isn't that a little like it? People come, have big issues, and they leave the teaching or the satsang and kind of found answers.
They don't find answers. Satsang connects you to a space of silence that what was bugging you before is starting to be understood as not who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
When you come, you're identified. You think that this is who you are. But satsang connects you to a deeper space that from there you of reference that, hey, there's a lot more to me than just that little problem that I think that it's me. And then it creates a huge space of rest, of expansion, and it's the beginning of sanity. Satsang is sanity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a therapy or it's starting to connect to a dimension that is sane. That is untouched by the problems that you have that come and go.